I discussed Holonomies. And so the other thing which we need to discuss today is basically the fluxes. And these are the two things, two basic families of observables, which we will have to represent on our Hilbert space at some point. Okay. So let's the fluxes are built out of these flux variables, which came from the co-triads. Let's remember so that we had the co-triads, which were one forms, and they used to be with an index. And if I don't write this index, it means it's contracted with a Lie algebra basis. So these are Lie algebra valued one forms. And then the fluxes were defined such, so that is needs to be careful with the order and the signs. These co-triads, you can basically dualize them. And that will give you a vector density. And these are actually the fluxes. And this gives you the Lie algebra valued co-triad in terms of our canonical variables. And now the idea is that, as we said, we need to smear the flux variables over d minus one-dimensional surfaces, which in the case that the d is 2, we are in 2 plus 1 dimension, is one-dimensional. And so we would have to kind of smear these things. Along a curve, which would work nicely because this is a one form, so it could integrate easily. Yeah?
So does the epsilon tilde contain factor
No, so yeah, so actually, yeah, I might not be consistent in doing that always. So this is a Levi-Civita density. Yeah, just a Levi, which is always plus or minus one in any coordinate system. Yeah, or minus whatever. Okay. So we basically want to add these things up along this curve. Which w last time I had, I guess I called the curve gamma, so where we integrated over the holonomy. So here I will use a gamma star for some reason, which we will see. And so here I would add up little vectors. We all live a priori in a different frame. So what does one need to do? It consistent to add up vectors which live in different coordinate systems? Maybe not. Yeah, so we have to parallel transport all these things to the same frame, to live in the same frame. And that's actually the reason why I wrote a gamma star here. So let me think. So actually we will consider the situation that we have a curve gamma. which is the one where we usually would integrate the holonomy along. And then we consider basically this curve, which is, has as the only condition that it needs to intersect this curve at some point, so not at an endpoint, somewhere in the middle. It doesn't really matter where. And it has to be transversal. So if you, you know, I mean, it depends a bit on which kind of category you choose. You can say it's analytical edges. In this case, transversal is well defined. And then there's a technical point, which is that I want the tangent vectors at the intersection to be positively oriented. And so gamma star, this pair, should be positively oriented. And I think now this is actually the case. I should. This is the condition. It's just the convention you have to choose. Not for the purpose of this definition, but later on, this will be give you a sign or not. And so now we basically would have to decide to which frame we parallel transport all these little vectors. And so what we decide is to parallel transport it to the source vertex of our edge. Gamma. And so we have to define a parallel transport which goes like here to this point, then to this point, and takes this vector here and transports it back. And so here on gamma star, I will have a parameter s as always. And so I define H gamma gamma star S to be exactly this parallel transport. Yeah.
What does it mean that the terminal gamma gamma star S bigger than zero?
So I just mean that the tangent vectors at the intersection point should be positively oriented. Positively oriented, and that this means that the determinants, if you put them in a matrix, if you write the vector components, are positively oriented. These are two vectors. So this will define your matrix.
So it's like a tensor product.
Oh. It's a gamma 1, gamma star 2, gamma star. No, sorry, I mean, it's basically this matrix. And components. And the determinant should be bigger than zero, which is just.
So that is just to ensure that they are transverse to each other.
Yeah, I mean, that is actually, they could be transverse also if it's smaller than zero. So it is to ensure that and to check, to fix this convention. I mean, later on, just to fix this convention, how this orientation is determined by the orientation of this curve. And this one has to fix at one point. And in fact, if they would be tangential, you would get zero, which is also a bit inconvenient, as you will see, or not very useful. Okay, so this will be, in fact, the parallel transport. From gamma zero, which is this point, to gamma s, which can be gamma star s. Which is along this curve. And then this parametrization for both curves, I can choose arbitrarily. So I choose it such that the intersection point is for s equal to 1/2 and s prime equal to 1/2, where s prime would be the parameter in gamma. So that can be always kind of adjusted. okay, it's another convention which doesn't matter, actually. So we do that, and then we actually discussed yesterday how should these vectors be parallel transported, and that happens with respect to the with taking the holonomy, which is a group element, and this group acts by a joint action. So it's a lengthy thing to write. So this is my internal vector. It lives at some point gamma star s, and these are my parallel transport matrices, and they have to act by a joint action, which I defined here. And here I have this index, which is a one-form index. And this gets contracted with a tangent vector of this dual curve, gamma star A. And then at S, obviously, I just need to integrate that over this curve gamma star. Or if you want, it's gamma star. So that means S is in 0, 1, according to our conventions. And so we see that actually we have these fluxes, which are a certain combination of these flux observables or the flux variables here, and these parallel transport matrices, which contain the connection. So it's not the simplest combination you can think of, but it is one which is defined, which has a nice transformation rule with respect to rotations, and that's why we actually parallel transported these things, because otherwise you would have to to apply the gauge transformations all along the curve. So with this holonomy, you basically transport all vectors into this frame, and that means these fluxes actually transform just with respect to gauge transformations at this frame. So if you apply a gauge transformation, this is your gauge transform vector, and that will be just change under with respect to the group element, the gauge group element at the source vertex. then there's basically with these definitions, you can think, okay, sometimes you need to do that. You have an edge gamma. And then you want to actually invert the orientation of gamma. So you have gamma minus 1. And so if you have the holonomy which is associated to gamma, but want to know what is actually the holonomy associated to the inverse edge, yeah, here you parallel transport with this group element. If you want to go backwards, you actually get the inverse group element. So here you basically get the inverted group element. And here, so notice that I just defined this to be the flux versus index gamma. So now you can also invert gamma here and figure out what you get. So what happens is that, okay, the orientation of this curve gets inverted. The only thing the other thing which happens instead of parallel transporting to the source vertex, you need to parallel transport to the end vertex. So the difference is that you actually can take your final result and basically parallel transport it from here to here. So basically, instead of looking at this thing, you basically consider the composed parallel transport, which would go like first from this point to this point, you go back and then you go to this point, and you get a minus sign. I think my you should get a minus sign because actually you change this tangent vector to be the opposite tangent vector. Okay, and so basically what that means is that to any curve gamma, you also know if you know the observables associated to gamma, you also know the observables associated to gamma minus one. So you just need to know the observables for one pair for one choice of orientation. Okay. So here is this thing. If I write it in formulas, we will need this in a second. Means that the parallel transport of this curve is given by actually from this point, starting from this parameter S, transporting to one half, and then transporting back to the source vertex. Okay, so here, by the way, holonomies, I have this. The way we defined it yesterday, if I have a holonomy H1, H2, then the composition of these holonomies is that first you parallel transport with H1 and then with H2. Okay, and that's consistent with this kind of a joint action to parallel transport it here. Okay, so these are the kind of conventions and rules which we need. And so the fluxes together with the holonomies define us the basic set of variables, which I mentioned in the last lecture, we need to define. And then basically would have to represent this or to quantize this basic set of observables. So these fluxes and the holonomies. And we have to quantize such that the Poisson algebra gets reproduced as a commutator algebra, which means that we would have to check the Poisson algebra.
Is the fact that the fluxes are supported on these one-dimensional curves special to two Poisson dimensions because
Yeah, so
the starlets and for DuPont to give you.
So in general dimension, you have to smear them over what D minus one spatial dimensions. And so here you will cut it. And then two spatial dimensions, they cut. You have cutting of two curves, which also is kind of generic. And then in three dimensions, you would have a surface. And then you get basically the Poisson algebra will see where the holonomy cuts this surface. And you can maybe imagine that in three dimensions, it would not be very effective to have just two curves because generically they will never see each other. Okay. So the nice thing is actually that one can indeed compute the Poisson algebra between these things. Also, it looks a bit complicated, and we will get a nice result. so what I will go through this computation because it's actually nice that one can really do that. Between this Poisson brackets and the holonomy, and let me maybe we need that. The holonomy from yesterday. You know, basically, we will actually just need this composition rule for holonomies, but these we figured out yesterday where these path ordered exponentials. So there was this lengthy formula to define these things. And things were ordered from, so actually this is a convention which basically gives you this ordering from right to the left. Okay, so we need to compute the Poisson bracket between this expression and basically this expression. And what we have given, what we know is the Poisson algebra between the connection there and the fluxes, which appear implicitly in the triads. so we need to extract basically the triads components from this smeared flux variable. And so let me just define you, or let me just tell you that there's a metric on the Lie algebra. It's called the Killing metric. And typically just given by the trace of these matrices. And it's negative definite. And so on these bases, it gives you just minus one half Kronecker delta. So modulo is minus one half. This gives you the basis is actually orthogonal. And so you can actually extract from a Lie algebra valued object, which is E. You can always extract the component by taking the inner product with the basis element, pj. And so you have just the minus 2 to cancel this minus 1 half. And so let's, and of course, the order doesn't matter because the trace is invariant under cyclic permutations. So we can define what is the component J of this object, E gamma. And so we take basically this, we apply this trace rule to this entire expression there. And so I have to write here all these, inside the trace, I have to write everything which is matrix valued. So this applies to Tj, the holonomies, all these Parallel transport things. There's a Tk, there's this inverse thing. There's all this matrix stuff. There's the E, this epsilon, which comes from the co-triad. And the flux observable, which basically is also from the co-triad. And so Tk times Ek gives me the vector as a Lie algebra valued co-triad times this epsilon. And so that's of course also at gamma star S. And then the only thing which I'm missing is this tangent vector to the curve E A ds. That's a long, lengthy thing. And so this is one lengthy expression. And actually, I will define this. I will abbreviate this as R, as RJK, which depends on a parameter S. And in fact, it is in fact the components of the rotation matrix, which is associated to this group element. H gamma gamma star S. And so you can take that actually, I mean, this claim can be checked by again taking a formula which we had yesterday in the beginning of the lecture, where I was saying that the rotation to group element gives you the joint action. And of course, I forgot. I usually forget what the order is. But if you take this formula, then you can actually verify this claim. But in fact, we won't actually need this interpretation. And we just need to use this as an abbreviation for this lengthy expression for me to write less. And so in fact, we just see that the flux is defined as this transportation stuff times, here we have the co-triad contracted with a tangent vector. So it's really just the co-triad. Okay. And we had this situation, which was upstairs there, that we consider two curves which might hit each other, and they only hit each other in this point. So that was the holonomy. So the holonomy won't see any of these other E's. So that means I can actually split my holonomy into three parts. Epsilon half. So which is this little part here? But the middle part here, and then basically the transports from the source vertex and towards the target vertex. And so we know that these parts, the outer parts, will commute with the flux because it only has this flux cutting being concentrated here. And so this middle part, I now basically just consider for infinitesimal epsilon. And so if we take this formula and look at it for infinitesimal epsilon, we just need to take one of these terms in the sum. And so this will be just linear in the connection. And S prime is a parameter for the holonomy curve. Okay, now this looks very reasonable because I would just have to compute terms up to epsilon squared and then take the limit to epsilon going to zero. And I just have to take an expression, two lengthy expressions. However, I just have one term here, E, which is a phase space variable, and one term here, which is a phase space variable. So I just have to collect everything together. But that's, you know, that will be the only term which will give us Poisson brackets. Non-vanishing ones. Okay, and I will consider this Poisson bracket actually. So let me explain here that this means I take the Poisson bracket with one component of the flux, and here it can be any matrix element H gamma. And I'm a bit lazy in not writing the matrix elements explicitly. And it would not be well defined and just taking here the flux, because then it would be Poisson brackets between two matrices. And I haven't defined you what I mean with that. Okay. so here you could basically always write MN if you want. So please do that in your mind or on your sheet of paper. And then we have to collect all these terms. And we make always this trick. If we deal with matrix valued things, that we use basically the basis element to stand for the basis, as a basis element to stand for the matrix, and to write the components then at some other place. Because what we just have to be careful is to keep the order of all the matrix elements, of all the matrices as it is. So we can't change this order. So this TL is in fact this TL. and it sits in between all these matrix elements. And what I have done here is that H gamma is 1 minus a thing. One is just a constant, so it won't commute with, I mean, it will commute with the flux. So this gives me zero anyway. And I just get a term from this minus sign term. So this is the matrix valued stuff. Then I have two integrals. One is over the dual curve gamma star. One is this integral. Then I have my rotation components, which come from here. So actually, I have all this stuff now. Okay, then after I've written this stuff, I have this tangent vector. And actually, I here have my actually components, that's the EBK, yeah, evaluated at gamma star S. And here I have my ALC, evaluated at gamma S prime, Poisson bracket ds, ds prime. So this is basically the only term with a Poisson bracket. And these things are canonically conjugated, so I will basically get a Kronecker deltas and a delta function. And we had actually that A with E gives something with plus one, so E with A gives minus one. This kills this minus one. So I have to write everything again. So this is exactly the same term. I get these two integrals. RJ I use some of these Kronecker symbols to contract some indices. So that gives me just all these terms. And from here, I will have a 2D delta function. And the 2D delta function is between the arguments. So this is really between this point, gamma star, S, and gamma S prime. Okay, so that's nice. We have something with a delta function. What do we need to consider now? I can guess what you said. Yeah, so we can't just solve for the delta function because the delta function has these arguments gamma star s. oh no, it's not a point. so you have to remember how you rewrite a delta function f of a function f y as a delta function in y, actually. And if I'm not too wrong, it's something like this. Maybe depending anyway on your convention. And actually, if you have more than one zero, it's also summing over the zeros of this function. and if you're in higher dimension, in fact, then you get the determinant here. And so in fact, we can see, so here we have a two-dimensional patch. Coordinate system S, S prime. And what we have is that this thing is mapped by basically gamma star gamma to your spatial manifold sigma. And this is also 2D. And yeah, it's basically. Which means that, that this really gives you this transformation, I don't know, capital gamma. And what is this? It's a, yeah, it's a Jacobi determinant. It's just a determinant of this transformation then, because we have an epsilon, which is a, gives you the alternating sum of these entries. so in fact, that is exactly determinant of the thing. And even wrote it in the correct way. So that is the thing which we assume to be positive. So you actually see if they are tangent to each other, you get a zero here and you would get zero. And if you assume that the curves, for instance, are analytic, then being tangent to each other means that they actually basically need to coincide for some time. Or they can be tangent to each other, but they would be only in tangent at one point. And if they coincide for some time, they would be basically actually coincide for the entire analytical patch. but in any case, if they're just touching each other, you would get zero. So you would only get the non-vanishing result if they really cut each other. So that's the first result. Then basically with this transformation formula, this determinant would basically exactly kill the determinant you need to transform this and to rewrite that into a delta function s prime. So these two terms give you exactly s prime. I haven't designed it perfectly. So what we get is the Poisson bracket between this flux and the holonomy h gamma 1/2 plus epsilon 1/2 TL h gamma 1/2 minus epsilon 1/2 0. So this gives me the delta function. Actually, a 2D delta function, which kills the two-dimensional integration. And so I only are left with RJL evaluated at s equal to 1/2. And so actually I would have to write the limit be here for epsilon going to 0. It's not very complicated to do the limit. And that's the result we get. Now we can go back to the definition of RGL. And using cyclicity of the trace, you can basically exchange the, or cyclic permute the order of these entries. And so that's why here I get a minus one. Here I get this thing at plus one. So each gamma, gamma star, 1/2, we defined this to be this H gamma, gamma star was a parallel transport from any point here. If it is 1/2, it's actually exactly this point back to here. So it's actually just H gamma, 1/2, or with my funny convention. This, in fact, is H gamma from 0, 1/2, H gamma 1/2, 0, -1. And so here you can basically retake that again. This is a matrix, which you can't see maybe. So here we have a matrix, and then we take the TL component of this. And here we have this TL appearing here again. So we can just write this, all this stuff, into here. And so we will get H gamma 1, 1/2, H gamma 1/2 0, which is just H gamma. And the other two terms cancel each other. Actually not, there's a TJ. You're done. So that's the result in all beauty. It goes through some messy, lengthy expression, and in the end, you get this nice result. And if you think of it, you might be surprised. I mean, so now we change the Poisson brackets. We had this usual Poisson brackets, which people love because it's easy to represent. Yeah, which is that AE is proportional to a constant or to one. Now you might wonder, now we got something more complicated because on the right hand side we again have something which depends on the phase space. This is not very surprising because what we did is kind of exponentiate EA. And so if you apply the Poisson bracket rules, you get the derivative of the exponential, which is the exponential. And so that's why you get H gamma, and all the matrices give you H gamma times T, J. And in fact, it turns out to belong to a very nice phase space. What do we need also to consider? We just computed H gamma with E. So we would have also to consider H gamma this any other thing H gamma prime. Yeah, which would be 0. Why? Yeah, so it could be even different curves, but all these things are, it could be also the same curve, but all these things just depend on the connection, and the connection components commute with each other. So it's so it could be also the same curve. Actually, one could also consider very weird cases, but we will, which you can find in a certain publication. but we will consider only the case that these two curves agree. And so in general, it will not be 0. Because one reason is that, in fact, the fluxes are complicated functions, a priori, which contain the connection and the fluxes. And the connection might not does not commute with the fluxes in the other case. So we would have to compute it, which I'm too lazy to do. But one can indeed compute it explicitly. In the same manner, I have computed these things. However, there's another argument, which is a bit heuristics and gives you a guess what it could be. And this guess turns out to be correct. And this could be something which the Poisson brackets have to satisfy, which is the Jacobi identity, probably, what you mean.
Yeah.
And so that's the Jacobi identity. And that's a very specific, that's a very funny thing which comes about that actually the Jacobi identity is satisfied for these, but here you get just the delta. But actually, if you have this thing, you get something which is a function here again. And so let's consider the Jacobi identity. Let me guess what we have to do. So we want to guess what is the commutator of these two things with the same curve gamma. And so we take it, we consider this double Poisson bracket. And apply the Jacobi identity. And the Jacobi identity will basically give me these Poisson brackets involving flux and one holonomy. And I apply this result above. And so I get two terms, minus h gamma tk tj plus h gamma TJTK, which is the commutator of two matrices TK, TJ, and the commutator gives you the epsilon tensor times TL. And this is the result that in fact, from this result, you already see this cannot be 0 because you get something non-vanishing here. And so what you guess is that, in fact, if you choose this part to be given by the epsilon tensor EL gamma. And if you choose, okay, it's also observed by epsilon KJL. Hey, that was a Lie algebra of SO3 or SU2. And these things are Lie algebra valued. So actually, the fluxes should represent me the Lie algebra of SO3. And so one gets this, this result, which you, one can also compute explicitly if you don't believe in this half guessing. And so, in fact, I don't want to. We found a very nice algebra which is closed over this case that I just consider two curves which intersect each other. I don't know, I have to decide how you write the matrix indices. So these things are always zero. This is what we found and computed. And this is what we concluded. And this turns out to belong to a very nice phase space. This, you know, you can take us matrix elements of a group element, which is an SE2. Actually, it holds for this kind of stuff, would hold for any Lie group. And so these matrix elements in the fundamental representation, they would count as coordinates on the group manifold. So what you find here is that the coordinates on the group manifolds on the group manifold commute. So we have a phase space which includes the group manifold, which is SE2. And we have other coordinates, the fluxes. And these turn out to be actually to describe you the so-called group, the cotangent bundle of SU2. And in fact, the cotangent bundle of SU2 comes as a natural symplectic form, which gives you exactly these Poisson brackets. And so one shouldn't be surprised that one finds here the Lie algebra commutators. So that's what always happens for basically the T star part. And the manifold, the coordinates itself commute, which goes along with having here basically a vector space structure, which is not curved. But the vector, these coordinates do not commute, which goes one to one with the fact that the manifold itself is curved. And so this basically gives you that the SU2 part is SU2 and curved as a manifold. This tells you that the bundle itself in the bundle direction is just a linear vector space. And this tells you something about the action of the fluxes on the group manifold. So that's the phase space T star SU2. And so it turns out that this has a very nice quantization despite this slightly complicated Poisson brackets. And that's what we will discuss tomorrow. Okay. Thank you.